Yesterday, I discussed how, although we're very proud of our great civilization, it's all animalism. We are all animals, sophisticated animals. Big leaders of society are big animals, and they make us into a pack of animals, snapping and barking and following behind them. We are systematically conditioned. We, the people, the ordinary people, are systematically conditioned to think that the goal of life is to acquire more objects, more and more objects, for sensual pleasure, mental pleasure. We are so much locked into a false conception of life that I am here to enjoy myself. And for that, I have to get money. And money, I'll spend it and become happy. The big leaders have made a society, consumer society, in which we just take it for granted that we have to acquire more and more useless things. But actually, we're empty. Nothing to satisfy our soul. We cover our hopelessness, our despair, with an emotional veneer of happiness. We pursue useless things like watching sports, collecting butterflies, and getting involved in discussing all the latest news, and all temporary, ephemeral things. We are misguided. Leaders misguide us, but then they are also misguided by the previous generation. It's going on generation after generation. Who's to blame? We're all to blame. We think that advancement means more concrete, more steel, more money, more pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. Enjoy ourselves. So that everyone feels that we have to keep busy working. I'm driven to, I have an ambition, a goal to get ahead, do something in my life. Or simply I have to fulfill my desires. So we're repeatedly striving to fulfill my desires, repeatedly frustrated because either the desire is frustrated and we don't get what we want and then we're frustrated, or we do get what we want and it doesn't satisfy us, so either way we're frustrated. Asha pasha shatayar badha kama krodha parayanaha. This is described in Bhagavad Gita. We are bound up by the ropes of desire, hundreds and hundreds of desires which we have, which tie us up, and we're driven by and attached to desire, which produces frustration and anger. This is our life. This is your life. Frustration. And the mentality that I should enjoy at any cost leads to crime. People doing things against even their immediate physical self-interest, such as ingesting all kinds of substances, which may give some immediate gratification, but which in the long term are harmful. Tobacco, alcohol, cannabis, they say it's not harmful. They like to think like that. So many things. Oh, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Crime, poverty. Of course, the poor will always be with us, as Lord Jesus Christ said, but the rich and the smart are good at manipulating things, so they get richer and other people get poorer. And this naturally leads to social unrest. Well, look at our society. Civilization, who's happy? No one's happy. It's a mess. What do we do? And then we take shelter in same things. Cigarettes, alcohol, sex, pornography, drugs. Or we get into some campaign. It becomes the goal of our life to convert everyone into a vegan or support one political party against another or campaign for LGBTQ plus rights. We get involved in something which gives us some purpose in life, but it's all empty because you can be L or you can be B or you can be T or G or Q or plus or you can just be a normal person, but you have to die anyway. Where's the pleasure? Having sex this way, that way, another way, changing your gender, where is the pleasure? We should rise to a higher state of consciousness. This is the point I'm trying to get at. Happiness does not come from the physical plane or the mental plane or the intellectual plane or even from the mundane emotional plane unless we realize that the real goal of life is to understand God, to connect with God, to be saintly, to rise above our animalistic propensities. Then all our advancement in the name of civilization, it all just leads to individual frustration, chaos, destruction, and socially also. Civilizations build up, then they collapse. The point is, we should focus on God, the reality of our spiritual existence in relation with God. When we do that, we invent so many distractions. I was saying drugs, sports, sex. And there are more high-class ones, you could say, like art, absurd modern art. And then we get literature, and we get so many novels. So many novels, just like modern art, it's meaningless. You look at something, and it's all shapes and blobs, and you can't make out what it is, and it's supposed to mean something. And then novels, they're just imaginary stories about imaginary people in imaginary situations. Ridiculous. We have science fiction, imagining what life might be like in a different part of the cosmos, in the future. It's all imagination. No, nothing real. Art focused on God brings us nearer to the truth. We live in a society of falsity, false hopes, false goal of life. And all our art and science and culture reinforces that. Whereas art and science and culture directed toward God brings us closer to the truth. Of course, we have to have a proper understanding of God. This term is largely misunderstood. Highly misunderstood. Even the atheists who deny the existence of God, they don't have a very clear concept of who God should be. They deny the existence of a God, the idea of a God that's been projected upon them by people who don't know about God. So in one sense, they deny that. Anyway, that's another topic. Atheism, even theism in an animalistic concept, give us this day our daily bread. It's like the dog goes, give me my food, goes to his master. It's an exchange. What are you going to give me? What do I get out of it? It's a long way from love of God. These are controversial points. I'm bringing them up not to stir controversy per se, and it's, of course, it's not likely that it's going to turn into a huge controversy because, you know, I'm just one person speaking out of how many thousands who give talks and they go on YouTube and Facebook and here and there, and who cares what I say? But if anyone does care what I say, because I am speaking from the platform of authoritative spiritual knowledge, trying to apply it to the situation, our existential situation. So I'm not deliberately trying to stir controversy, but to bring attention to the fact that the way we think, the way we respond to various stimuli, our attitudes in life are very similar to those of animals. Territorial concerns, animals defend their own group. I spoke about that yesterday. There's one pack of dogs against another pack of dogs. We defend our own group and we feel concerned for our own group. Of course, within our own group, we have infighting also. We don't care about the other. Humans should be on a higher platform, but generally, we're not. We've advanced, so they say, in technology and science, but we haven't risen above our animal instincts. And religion at the best level, is to bring us to a higher platform of consciousness. The first thing we should realize, we are conscious living beings. Even ethics, morals, art, all these ideas, these concepts, they arise due to the presence of spirit. Consciousness is the defining characteristic of spirit. We are spiritual beings. We're not at all, actually, the bodies that we live in. Sometimes we ask, do animals have a soul? We could ask, do humans have a soul? The answer is no. We are soul, and we are covered by a body. It's not that I am a body and I have a soul. It's a misunderstanding. Without developing empathy, morals, beyond the animalistic stage of my ethics, my might is right, or I look after people in my own group, I care for people in my own group, I don't care for others, then we're just animals, or maybe less than animals, because some animals, they have empathy for others. So going beyond animalism, the Vedic message is, Ahara nidra bhaya maithunam cha samanam etat pashubhir nararnam gyano hitesham adhiko vishesham gyanena hina pashubhir nararnam. This verse points out that humans and animals have in common eating, sleeping, fearing, which leads to fighting, defending, or attacking, fearing and mating. So what is the difference between a human and animal? Knowledge. And here, specifically, knowledge means knowledge of our spiritual situation. Without that, we are no better than animals. We have the same propensities in common, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And there are other things. it may be that we have in common with animals. Some animals, they appreciate music. Some, or many species of birds, they sing beautiful music. Elephants can be trained to paint pictures very well. You wouldn't be able to tell, unless you were told, that it's painted by an elephant. If you put an elephant in front of a tree and they can paint the tree. Not every elephant, they have to be trained. So painting a picture doesn't necessarily make you better than an animal. How about that? Only humans can develop transcendental knowledge, knowledge of our higher consciousness beyond animal consciousness. Or sometimes in this verse, a variant reading is dharmo hitesham adhiko vishesham dharmena hina pashubhya naranam. That dharma is the defining characteristic of humans as distinguished from animals. Dharma there's broad meanings. It means to act in harmony with the universe according to the rules given by the maker of the universe. Either we say knowledge or dharma distinguishes the human being. The point is that in human life, atato brahma jignasa. Now we came to the human life after many, many births. We should inquire into the nature of the absolute truth. This is not possible for animals to inquire like this. So unless we develop this consciousness of searching for the higher truth, and not just as a theoretical proposition, but actually utilizing our human life primarily for understanding the absolute truth, then we're animals. We're concerned with enjoying the senses. Animalistic. We're meant for higher consciousness. We sometimes may get insights of higher consciousness and understand that exploitation and might makes right should not be the underlying principle of human society, and then we invent philosophies like communism. And we see communism, it sounds good, everyone equal, and in the zeal to implement communism, how many millions of people were killed in the name of making a better society, making life better for everyone, and those who don't agree, kill them, making life miserable, or just snuffing them out altogether. 20th century. 20th century was the century which, in terms of political history, for about 80 years, starting in Russia and later in China and Kampuchea, there were massive pogroms in which literally millions of people were killed in order to institute a fair, equitable society. At the present time also, we have cultural Marxism going on, and a major manifestation of this is the feminist movement, which has been successful in convincing governments to reverse the situation whereby men had greater leverage than women did. I say greater rights, but it's not really a right if you have the ability to exploit others. Or let's say men had higher legal status, and the feminists said we want equal rights, but now the women have higher legal status. For instance, generally it's seen all over the world, both in the constitution of the law, the way the law is written, as well as the implementation of the law in divorce cases, for instance. In divorce cases, women are always given the upper hand, the benefit of the doubt, generally given the custody of the children. So it's not equality. In the name of making everyone equal, you make one group, you reverse from one group being advantaged over the other to the group underneath coming up. All animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. That's what happens. Animal Farm. Very insightful book by George Orwell. In the name of making everyone equal, you just make a new class of despots who go hand in hand with the previous class of despots. Is it hopeless? Well, as long as we're in animalistic consciousness, we're always going to see exploitation of the weak by the strong. The strong should protect the weak, but the law of the jungle is that the strong dominate and exploit the weak. Here in India, in Delhi, women ride free on the buses. Men have to pay. Why is that? Throughout the country of India, there are certain constituencies in elections are selected that only a woman can be voted, can be elected. So how is that democracy? What if someone wants to vote for someone other than the women who are up there, or no one else can, men can't stand in that constituency? So in the name of making equal, they turn the whole thing on the head. Feminists don't, they were saying it's not fair, it's not equal, but then when women get a higher legal status and more privileges, then they don't complain. It's the spirit of exploitation. So we see that when exploitation is pointed out and we try to make some adjustment, we end up exploiting in another way. You can do what you like. You can make different social systems, different adjustments. The problems of the world will remain, because the root of the problem is animalistic consciousness, based on ignorance of our spiritual situation. How do we come to a higher platform? How can we rise beyond animalism? Does that mean making everyone equal in all respects? Well, that's not possible, because all people are not equal. If we try to make everyone equal, we end up in a mess. Communism, I just gave the example. We just can't treat everyone the same all the time. If you try to make it equal, then as it wasn't happened in communism, the people who are more smart and exploitive and animalistic and demoniac, they get in charge and they exploit others. If we just say, well, everyone's equal, we treat them all the same, there has to be some kind of check on exploitation, because there are grossly criminalistic-minded people. We don't treat them equally. We lock them up. Someone is a mafiosi boss or a repeated burglar who's always breaking into people's houses. We don't treat them equally. We're very happy that they're locked away. They should be locked away in prison. We greatly restrict their freedom. It's required. That has to be enforced. Otherwise, society becomes hell. So all are not equal. This idea, it's trying to rise beyond animalism by instituting artificial egalitarianism, which is to bring in absolute egalitarianism, it's just another mistake. Certain people have seen that there is a problem in exploitation, but then their solution isn't a solution because they are still on the animalistic platform. They haven't understood, they haven't come to the platform of spiritual knowledge. The idea that, well, we should all be equal. We see in nature the strong rule the weak, and in human society, that's also just a fact of life. And it's required. We need people at the head of society, leaders in society, who can take the stress, who are intelligent, who can take decisions, who are well informed, who know what to do. We don't want leaders who are idiots. I mean, most of them are idiots, it seems like that, but we don't want leaders who are idiots. We don't want leaders who are grossly foolish and always dithering and don't know what to do. Uneducated, they have no idea. Someone's going to be the head of a nation like India, major nation in the world, or the United Kingdom, or the United States of America. They should have some idea of how societies work and how foreign policy works, how economics works. They should be exceptional people. So we just can't say we can just stick anyone in charge because we're all equal. There's some idea of direct democracy, which was the national polity in Switzerland for many years, which seems to be somewhat compromised nowadays, in which everyone has the opportunity to vote about everything. But it's not possible always for a group of people to vote to make a decision which is for their own benefit in every case. For instance, people don't want extra taxes, but sometimes you need to raise the taxes, for instance, to develop or repair infrastructure. And if we go by votes alone, then we get majoritarianism, where one group of people who are in the majority numerically, if we go by votes, they can make policies which are detrimental to smaller group. They don't care about the smaller group, so to hell with them. These are some of the realities of sociology, politics. It's not so easy. We can go out with our placards and make slogans, but life is quite complex. Simply to say, make everyone equal, make love not war. We have some slogans, but life is very complex. And it becomes more complex when we are in the animalistic, exploitive spirit. There are so many political theories about how to organize human civilization. One that has not come to the fore in contemporary society is one which is considered something in ancient India, the vestiges of which remain in modern India, the Varnashram system, which is wrongly called the caste system, largely wrongly interpreted, and is used as a stick by person, uses an object to be beaten by the sticks of propaganda by persons who, in their animalistic consciousness, want to denigrate India and Indian society and culture at every step. The Varnashram system. Varna means one's position in society due to one's innate propensity. So you have brahmanas who are at the top of society, who are very intelligent, very spiritually minded. They're at the top of society, but they don't enjoy. Their spirit is not to enjoy. Their spirit rather is to be detached from enjoyment. Therefore, they're the right people to lead society. They lead society by their knowledge, by their purity, by their spiritual advancement, and by their advice. And administration is done by kshatriyas. They're the hands-on leaders of society. Vaishyas are those who are producers, especially of in the agricultural field, and also traders and shudras, everyone else, they assist the others. Some are artisans, some are artists. But different people have different propensities. If I was supposed, you want to make me a soldier, it's not going to work. It wouldn't have worked even when I was 20 years old. I have neither the physical capacity nor the mental proclivity, but I can do other things. So it's a very scientific system of organizing people according to their propensity and their ability. That's varna, and ashram means in the early stage of life there should be education, then there's the married stage of life, then the retired stage of life means one retires not just to sit around and watch TV and smoke and go to the pub, but become detached from material activities for the sake of becoming more involved in spiritual activities. And sannyas, some may take, that's the fourth stage, in which one completely severs connection with society on a, in terms of material activities. So it's a big topic, but the Varnashram system is meant for recognizing that even though everyone is equal spiritually, but materially we're different, we have materialistic exploitive tendencies due to our lower nature, that should be controlled by the higher nature. Those tendencies should be purified in a structured manner. The structured manner means that we give everyone the opportunity to engage in their propensities, in their lower natures, in their propensities and in their lower natures, to some degree, under control. Just like the tendency is there for sex, that should be allowed in society, it's required for procreation, but not here, there, and everywhere as you like. There should be some control. That's called marriage. The controlling system is called marriage. And then even within marriage, there are strictures or guidelines, some control. It doesn't unrealistically try to convert people from a human animal overnight, but it's a gradual system of purifying people, giving structures to society in which everyone can bring out what's best in them without trying to artificially make everyone equal, and at the same time, spiritual program to raise everyone up spiritually, raise everyone to a higher level, which means people have to be treated in different ways. It's not all the same. The endeavor to rise above animalism by making everyone equal is just another big mistake. I already said it, and they tell you when you're giving talks you shouldn't say the same thing again, but it's worth repeating. It's a big, big mistake, artificial egalitarianism. In the Varnashram system, some people get privileges which others don't, because those people are on a higher level of consciousness. At the present time in human society, people who have more money have privileges more than others. That's the basic criterion of status. But in Varnashram society, the brahmanas, they're not expected to work like people of lower nature. They're not sent to the fields to toil in the fields. But they have to work in the sense that they have to apply their mental energy. They have to study. They have to be learned. They have to be trained so they can give advice to others. So they also have a kind of work, but it's a different kind of work. There are many privileges offered to brahmanas. They're to be respected by all, because if they're to give advice, they should be respected. But they're respected for not just as because they're awarded some status, but because they're respectable by their attitude of wanting to help others by giving advice, by their detachment, by their rising above the animalistic propensities. They're not sense enjoyers. Brahmanas have a lot of freedom from the law. They're not to be punished. The general rule is brahmanas are not to be punished. But at the same time, it's generally understood that brahmanas don't do any crassly sinful acts. If he does, he may be forgiven once. It depends how bad it is. But for a brahmana, if he even once takes alcohol, he can be thrown out of the brahmana society. They're very strict also. The training is such among brahmanas, and true brahmanas in Varnashram society, that someone raises a brahmana will have very little propensity or even opportunity to engage in gross sinful activities. It's a big, big discussion, Varnashram. The main point is that in human society, in the name of civilization, what's going on is animalism. We haven't risen above the animalistic propensities. And thus, repeatedly, civilizations are built up and are destroyed, and as thinkers in the Western world have been noting for 100 years or more, that Western civilization is on its way down. Very powerful, very influential, but it's on its way down. It's yet another civilization which has risen up, and it's going down, going to the dogs. Did it ever rise above the dogs? That's the way it goes on. Civilizations build up big buildings, big cities to show superiority, but due to the animalistic propensity, the civilizations, they're advanced in how to enjoy the senses and exploit others, and eventually other people come who just tear down their civilization or take it over. Someone may be considered very sophisticated, civilized in one life, maybe very famous, a paragon of advanced civilization, but in the next life, due to his animalistic consciousness and activities, by the law of karma, he will become an animal. One astrologer said that the first prime minister of politically independent and truncated India, in his next life, what happened? A man in Sweden had two dogs, and one of those dogs was the first prime minister of India, according to one astrologer. This prime minister, although he was considered a great philosopher, socialist, he was known for his animalistic propensity of extramarital sexual affairs. So it's not surprising if he became a dog in his next life. considering that dogs, they don't have restrictions on their sexual activities. They're very sexually oriented, and you don't have to get married as a dog. You just do it. If it feels good, do it. So the first Prime Minister of India is very sophisticated, intelligent, politically powerful, respected throughout the world, had an image of being a good man who wanted to do good for India and the world. But his level of consciousness was that of an animal. Women are there, enjoy them. If leaders are like that, then what is the hope for the whole civilization? And what is this civilization? You go in the cities, you see people are moving around here and there, going here, going there. What are they doing? Where are they going? What's their purpose? In an aquarium, you see the fish. They swim from one side to the other and back again. Sometimes one of them may suddenly go a little quickly, and he slows down again. Why are they doing it? Well, I guess they have to do something. The impetus is to do something. So in human society, why is everyone running around here and there? Why? What's the purpose of their life? You see in the streets of the big cities, everyone's in anxiety. They have so many fears. The underlying sense of fear and anxiety, exactly why, they may not know. They may not even recognize it in themselves. See the fish when some food is thrown to them, all of a sudden they become blah, 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 all excited. So in the same way, humans, when they get some opportunity for sense enjoyment, blah, blah, they become all excited. Otherwise, they're just going here and there, backwards and forwards, without any particular reason. Just living out their lives without any thought of who are we, where are we going, what are we doing, why are we doing what we're doing? Forgetting the past, just what can I get now? And not looking into the future. What happens when I die? It's not surprising that we're no better than animals when we're taught in the schools that we are animals. And there's no spiritual dimension. Simply there was some big bang and then the universe came into being and then all the chemicals settled down and gradually different forms of life developed, and we're just combinations of chemicals. Indirectly, this theory of the universe arising from nothing and that life arises from matter, indirectly it denies the spiritual dimension, which is who we really are. I'm not a human, I'm not an animal, I'm not this body, I'm not the chemicals that constitute this body, I am a spiritual being. We are not the body. This is the wrong thing that's taught to us directly and indirectly from the moment we get a body that appears in this world. We are spiritual by nature. We have been in animal bodies innumerable times, and we will get innumerable animal bodies until we come to the point of considering this instruction by Lord Krishna, which I'll say now. Ladvasu durlabham idam bahusam bhavante manusham artadam anityam apihadhira turnam yateta napateta anumritya yavan nisrayasaya vishayakalu sarvata syat. Lord Krishna teaches that we are now in a human body after having been through many, 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 many births. This body is attained after many births. it doesn't last very long. None of us are going to live very long. So while we have this human birth with the attendant consciousness or intelligence, power of discrimination that comes with human life, we should find out the way and act in such a way that we don't have to get birth again. This is the special prerogative of human life, which makes human life better than that of the animals. Building big skyscrapers, having sophisticated technology, does not make us better than animals. It's just sophisticated animalism. So if we think, let me enjoy myself as a human, we should consider. We have the opportunity, we've had the opportunity in innumerable lifetimes. And if we want to enjoy like an animal, then again we'll get animal bodies one after the other. So don't waste our life. Real civilization, rising above animalism, means simple living. Don't make life unnecessarily complicated. The land is there. We can, from the land, take food. Don't make life unnecessarily complicated. Take the minimum that we need. Simple living, high thinking. Instead of I, me, and mine, might makes right, we should think, as the Vedic injunction tells us, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. Every living being in this world is related to me, because we're all under the same Supreme Lord. Varnashram dharma. Ultimately, we have to go toward God. If we're going to understand God in full, we have to go to the Vedas, because Veda means knowledge. Then God means Krishna, the all-attractive. The full definition of God is given as Bhagavan. Krishna, these are all the points to be understood. In these two talks, I've simply tried to impress the point that we should not live like animals. Of course, we can't just change a whole civilization like that. We should, but at least we can change our own life. And if enough people takes it up, then we can take We can see a huge change in civilization, but at least individually, don't waste our life like an animal. Search for God. We can find God in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, in chanting his names. That is the topic of another talk, many talks. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya vacha. Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nidhaya chunakang padaya nipatya kritva chakakushatameta daham bravimi. Hey, sadhava sakala eva vihaya durad. Gauranga chandra charane kurutanu raga. Parivadatu jano yatata tava nanu mukaro navayang vichara yamaha. Hari rasamadi ramadati matta bhuvivilu tama nartama nirvisham.